You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans? A little odd to be playing the locker room victory music on a non-victory Monday. Good afternoon, everyone. Trevor, I believe you're Trevor Gebhardt, everybody, by the way. Number three in your program, number one in your hearts. No music, you were thinking, as an intro when they do take the L.
Yeah, pre-production, we talked about what we should do. Set the tone. We can have a another discussion about it, but we don't get to sing the song after a loss in the locker room, so
we should not sing the song.
Yeah, exactly, it's a mindset. So maybe we'll take a poll vote with the bench warmer guys too and see what they have to say.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, jumping into the news, unless you've been living under a rock, you understand that North Dakota State lost 28-31 to Arizona in the desert. Other not great news is that Trey Lance has broken his ankle. Did that in the first quarter of San Francisco's win over Seattle yesterday. He was running up the middle and got rolled up on, and looks like a broken ankle, probably done for the season. Looked honestly like kind of a similar mechanism to the Eli Mostert injury, frankly, to me. Good news, Cordell Volson was Cincinnati's highest graded offensive player in week two, according to Pro Football Focus, after a bit of a struggle against Cam Hayward in Cincinnati. Another odd one, the Forbes Mike McFeely publishing a clip of what appears to be Jed Fish absolutely hollering F-U, not that, the actual word, to the NDSU sideline at the end of the game. Also declaring after the game, and we'll get into this in a bit. I know, Trev, you said you wanted to talk about it, but we'll just make it topic A, not necessarily the most important topic, but the first topic when we start talking. And, mentioned the game was personal to him and hollering an FU at the sideline. That was interesting. First loss to an FBS school since Iowa State in 2009 for the Bison. But what I wanted to do here, Trev, is just get your take on kind of Matt Entz's general message here on a Monday after losing that game, and just kind of get your thoughts on where he's at.
So we learned a lot. Our kids were, like I said, very frustrated, but nobody's disappointed. I'm not disappointed in any one of our coaches or our players, because the effort, the preparation was outstanding last week. Now the challenge is to take that same mentality and to put it now to this week.
So Trev, as a former player, how do you feel about that as a message after a disappointing, and I of course just use the word disappointing, but if you're a fan and you traveled down to Tucson and you have been winning these games for the last 15 years, you were disappointed. So what do you think that message following a loss that if you never want to lose, but that's one that, could have been certainly a legacy play for Coach Entz and a legacy play for the 2022 Bison.
Right. I think to boil it down, Coach Entz said it best. It's more frustrating versus disappointing in that locker room. And the reason it's more frustrating than disappointing is because you're not necessarily disappointed in yourself I think the guys definitely put their best foot forward to give themselves a shot. And it's just that you had ample amount of opportunities to put that game away. It wasn't just one. It wasn't just two. They had more than their fair share of chances to go and win a football game. And no matter the opponent and the stakes, that is going to be frustrating when you have that chance and you don't get it done. So, and then that's amplified even more when it's a team that has more scholarships than you and they're a Power Five program and when you're favored. So you feel like you're falling short of your goals when that happens. And the biggest thing is taking that and channeling it and learning from it and understanding that when you get into these knock down, drag out type games back and forth, you have to be cleaner and more mistake free. So that's, I think, why it was frustrating, because they know they can do it and they just didn't get it done.
Yeah, that was my thing. I just didn't think they played their best game. And I said they weren't going to have to be perfect to beat Arizona, mm-hmm. but they were going to have to play well, and I don't know how well they played.
Yeah, I think, we're obviously going to jump into different parts of that game, but my three keys to the game coming in, this isn't something I had either published or had on the pregame pod since I wasn't able to make it there, but time of possession had to hit 35 minutes. They fell short by about four. You had to play clean football. What does that mean? That means penalty free for the most part and win the turnover battle. And that was talked about through and through pretty much every media outlet about winning the turnover battle. They didn't do that. And win in the trenches. Okay, what does that mean? You have to outrush them. They clearly did that. But you also have to get to the quarterback. So they only got half of that equation. And when you hit half of one equation, you don't play clean football. You lost the penalty and turnover battle, and you don't hit the time of possession mark against an explosive offense. You didn't win the football game. So I just think it's one of those things where you kind of get the, from a very general overview standpoint, you get the loss out of the way. And these kids do seem like the type that are competitors that are going to use this to propel them into valid play. So.
Yeah, it's crazy how close they were to winning that game by losing the turnover battle, barely winning TOP, and I'm not saying they got, ripped off by the whistle. That's not my point. But they lost the penalty battle pretty decisively. So, for them being a 4th-and-1 away from salting that game away, or 4th-and-1.5, 4th-and-2, we'll talk about it in a second. Not in a second. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, I guess I was impressed with just how they could hand in like a C-minus performance against a Pac-12 opponent and still just about have a chance to win. In my opinion, honestly, sells a little bit about like how good this group can be, and I do see that as somewhat of a promising thing. Anyway, this episode of Bison Report Radio is brought to you by the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. We've mentioned they've been with us all season long. We appreciate absolutely everything that the good folks over at Gateway do to keep Bison Report Radio on the air and cooking. And right now, folks, they have over 250 used cars and trucks over at the Gateway Clearance Center, with payments starting as low as $199 a month with on-the-spot financing. It is newly remodeled with a lot of clean used vehicles. They're at 2302 South University Drive, right by the Taco Bell, right just south of the interstate. And good people over there. Go see my guy, John Cole, the general sales manager, and he'd be happy to hand you off to one of the fine salespeople right there at Gateway Chevrolet. Once again, Bison Report Radio brought to you by the good folks at Gateway Chevrolet. GatewayFargo.com for details. Trev, you wanted to get into this, and so we're going to get into this. And I want, what do you think Jed Fish meant when he said it was personal? Because as far as I can see, he and Coach Entz don't, like, their paths don't cross a ton. I don't understand it from that perspective. Yes, Arizona mm-hmm. was an underdog, but, I think you play that game 10 times, Indies, you probably win 6 or 7 of them.
Right.
I I don't know. I mean, that's fine. You get hyped up after a win. I get it 100%. But this is a team that they probably won't play again for 10 years, if ever. Why was it personal?
That is, I think, going to be a mystery. And I don't think it, quite frankly, matters at the end of the day. I mean, there's something there underlying that he has that would prompt to say that. Now, I do think it might be just a little bit of coach speak, to be honest with you. And the reason I have that opinion is because I watched that clip, I think just one time, and I just moved on because I didn't read much into it because I didn't feel the passion behind it. When something is personal, you know it. And even if you're objective about the situation, like, I did not feel any sort of personal, I guess, win that he got from that other than maybe having some sort of motivation for his team because they were not favored against an FCS opponent. You might feel a little bit disrespected. I get it. And maybe that's why. Maybe he felt like their team had done enough this year to show that they should have been favored, and clearly they won the game. And that's my only thought. I will touch on the clip that McFeely posted too. I'm not here to defend the guy. I also don't think that really matters. I think tying it to, I'm connecting dots that might not even be there, but with one of his players claiming that NDSU is cheap rather than physical. Number one, they're not used to that type of play. The Pac-12 doesn't play that type of football. So I can see how that can get misconstrued. This program is not built on that. So I know that didn't exist. I certainly didn't see it within the game. If I missed it, I did, clearly, because I didn't see it. I think he was just defending his players. He's probably getting feedback from them that they're cheap, they're doing this, that. But the other thing, multiple people have stated that they have not or did not see that, myself included. So I think it's just a coach in his mind defending his players, which I'm all for. I mean, if his players are telling that, he has no reason to not believe them. I mean, those are his guys, and they're in that together. So I think him doing that is probably more of a sigh of relief, just coming out and wearing his emotions on his sleeve in that moment more than anything. So it's not a good look, certainly, based off what it appears that is said. But I think in that moment, college sports, they're very passionate. Fans are very passionate. Players and coaches are very passionate. And I think in that moment, it's just the coach not fully understanding there's a nationally televised game and you're a Power 5 program and you might have some eyes on you. And that's just, I think that's just an awareness factor, simply put. So I don't think it's a big deal, but I know it can get viewed in a certain light.
And I don't think it's a big deal either. I think, honestly, it's a compliment to North Dakota State and the program that they built. I think if I had to guess, he probably just whipped that team up into a frenzy with – you know, internet comments and tweets and articles about how they weren't favored, and they're not just an FBS university; they're a Power 5 university in their own building. You know, and I think he probably just got himself and his team so darn worked up that by the time the end of the game came around, he just kind of released that you know, that's fine. I'm not. I promise you, I am not clutching my pearls about, you know, the FU at our sideline. I'm not telling Jed Fish, you know, to stay classy. I am interested to know what, why it got
the
to
personal
that point.
Side.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Why it got to that point.
Yeah.
I think they probably just made it personal so that his team wouldn't take an FCS school lightly. That's my guess.
But I credit that to good coaching too. Like, if that's the fuel to the fire, which I think it's pretty plain as day to use that, like, that program has made leaps and bounds strides. I mean, preseason, this game, we were talking about how we anticipated double digit favorites, and now we did not know how well that offense would gel together and how much improved the quarterback play was going to be, let alone how much, Jaden DeLauro has improved this season progressively throughout each game. So I think you have to credit the coaching staff for Arizona in that regard for using what they had. So, and they got the job done.
They did. They did. And I mean, it would have been difficult, you know, if you're North Dakota State to understand, or if you're a North Dakota State fan, you know, you watch them go 1-11, you watch them lose to NAU. You didn't know how well the portal was going to go for these guys. You know, it was,
right.
You didn't know that they were going to bring in the biggest recruit in history, in their history, in that wide receiver, I think number 4, kid out of Hawaii, absolute stud, by the way. He's going to be a problem. Not just Cowing, the UTEP transfer. That freshman kid is nasty. Anyway, but defensively, Trev, like, I don't know. You know, I mentioned to Coach Entz in the press conference today, like 31 is not a number you give up very often. And they missed, you know, we talked about they missed 31 tackles, according to PFF College, in the first two games. Let me see. I can actually look it up right now, how many missed tackles they were credited with this time. They missed 10 tackles against Arizona. I mean, that's a big deal, man. But it's not the only issue. It's not the only issue. I think they've got issues in the defensive tackle room. I think the depth there was questionable without losing your best player. And something we're going to talk about in a little bit, that Mike and Sam situation is a real issue. I mean, that those guys need to play better, or Cole Wisniewski needs to come back, in my opinion. I just think, you know, they've got to get some sort of it's funny, too, because I just think there's such a dichotomy what Luke Wirtz does well and what Kubitz does well. Like, if Kubitz could hit and tackle like Wirtz, that'd be great. And if Wirtz could cover like Kubitz, that'd be great. But that isn't the case. So I don't know what I'm taught, you know, and like, I don't know what to do about all that. What did you see on the defensive side of the ball? Obviously, North Dakota State, just not a school that gives up 31 points to anybody.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing in this particular game is you had athletes for Arizona that made the plays when they had to, and they played efficient football when they had to. Jaden DeLora, I think, is going to progress very, very well throughout the season. And I think what my opinion is that once we get to like November, December, we're going to look back on Jaden DeLora as a quarterback and what he does throughout the Pac-12 season and go, okay, that makes sense. Those receivers are also very athletic. I don't think any of them are to the level that Tyler Lockett was at when we played him, but they could be. And they've got some athletic studs that when they're in open space, they're tough to tackle. And when you have a quarterback that is doing that and you have receivers that are doing that, tough deal. You just got to be in the right place at the right time. And that has been a consistent theme in every game now. And it's something that I fully expect has to get cleaned up before Valley play, because you're going to see it over and over again. Trying to get guys in space to where it's man on man and you got to go make the tackle. So if that means the Mike and the Sam have to start hitting some tackling dummies more after practice, that might be the case. I don't know. I don't know what exactly they have to do, but it is very apparent when you're giving up. You know, they gave up that opening drive to Drake. I get it's the first game, so you can kind of take it with a grain of salt, but it's a reoccurring theme now. So use this as tape to learn from. And I think just simply work on the things that you need to get better at. And that is, I think, just going back to the basics and tackling.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you schematically. If it were me and tackling doesn't get better, any like this stuff doesn't get better, I might dial up the pressure a little bit more. And if these guys, you know, aren't going to run fit or aren't going to tackle in space, don't have them in space a ton. Like, just start bringing zero blitzes. And I know that isn't the answer to everything, but they weren't getting to the quarterback with 4-man rush and dropping 7 anyway, you know. So some zero blitzes, some man free blitzes. I would maybe send Kubitz and Wirtz downhill a little bit more often, You know, the Patriots won a Super Bowl not having either of, when they had Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower, completely different schemes, but like they knew Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower couldn't tackle anybody. So they just sent him every play. And I know that's crazy. You know, if we're talking about
money,
right. Like I get that that's insane when you're talking about like inside backers. It's just not what they traditionally do, but I'm not sure. Not sure what to do. In fact, I asked Coach about the linebacker play and kind of, you know, it's odd to just be taking a mic on and off the field, and it's odd, a little bit less odd to be rotating Sam's, but the rotating mics thing is a little bit weird, especially now that, you know, that was a game that they were definitely trying to win. I don't know how much they were trying to win those first two games. I think from a schematic standpoint, from a substitution standpoint, they knew they were going to win those games. You know, that they didn't have the game plan to beat those teams. They're already going to beat those teams just by lining up. And I know they certainly didn't approach it probably that way verbally with the players, but everyone's on the same page when you're playing NCAA&T and you're playing Drake. This was a different thing, and they still rotated those guys. So I asked Coach, you know, kind of what his thoughts were, and I thought the answer was really interesting.
Mike and Sam, or are you ever going to get to a point where you want to pick a guy? I mean,
I would love to get to a point where we could pick a guy. Somebody needs to give me a reason to pick a guy.
Goodness.
Well.
Trevor, your thoughts.
I don't think he can be any more clear. Somebody's got to step up. Which is, it's good and bad. It's good because you have depth, but it's bad because nobody's really solidifying themselves as the guy. Like, you've got guys that can play, and we know that. I'm not concerned about that. But when you don't have a bona fide dude, it can make things a little bit hazy from a confidence standpoint for both players, because you don't know where you fit in. They have got to have clearly defined roles and execute them clearly, and that is something that this program has thrived on. Everyone just knows what their role is. You don't even always have to speak about it. But if those two are constantly coming in and out, number one, you can't get in the flow. And number two, they're going to constantly question what their exact role is. Now, I'm sure they are very well aware of what their skill set is. That's fine. But somebody needs to be a definitive, okay, I'm playing in the middle at the mic, and I'm playing at the sand. You know, it's Oscar or Julian or Nick or Luke. I don't know. So I'm certainly not the defensive eye for that, but when that's coming from the head ball coach, I don't think it could be any more crystal.
For sure. For sure. I'm going to do some Oak Grove High School math here. Really impress everybody. So
Oak Grove High School math, this ought to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, so the next thing on the docket here for us is middle of field pass defense, and it's a tough look. So of the 229 yards that Delorier threw for,
mm-hmm.
181 of them were given up by a middle of field pass defender. And so we've got – I'm going to break that down for you just so you understand that I'm not just making this up. You had, from a yards perspective, you had 3 yards given up by Luke Wirtz. You had 64 yards given up by James Kaiser, 61 yards given up by Dawson Weber, and 44 yards given up by Oscar Benson. Those are all linebackers, safeties, nickels, whatever. And Talbert gave up 43 yards, but I think he was mostly playing outside, because I think Dom Jones ended up playing a lot of nickel or a lot of Sam, whatever, however you want to call that position. So, I mean, you've got, let's see, 181 divided by 229. You got 80% of your passing yards that are given up by your middle of the field pass defenders.
Yeah, I think that's more indicative of Arizona game planning well and understanding where their strengths are at and knowing what NDSU is going to do to try to defend them on the outside. So I think you're putting more bodies on the edges to combat the athleticism from that trio of wide receivers, and understanding you're going to be giving up something in the process, and that would be the middle of the field. So I think that's twofold. Number one, being able to defend it and being able to take away those Hank type routes, which is like 5 yards over the center, whether they're crossing or curling down to that, just kind of that middle area, right inside the box or just outside of it, or like right inside the seams. So if you're Arizona and you understand that they have struggles covering that, and knowing you have strengths on the edges, and they're going to put more bodies out there, it's going to get exploited, especially when you have a quarterback that can see it and find it and run there too. I think that can't be understated, because DeLora, I don't know what he ended up with rushing wise. He had like 50 or 60 yards or something like that.
Yeah, and he had negative 33 yards coming into the game.
Yeah, and I think I don't think that was by design. I think that's just him progressing in his skill set as a quarterback and having confidence in his ability and understanding, oh my gosh, the middle of the field's wide open. No one's spying him right there. I'm going to take this. So I think it's twofold. I think it's, yes, it needs to be worked on, coincided with the tackling piece of it. So there are a little bit of defensive concerns. But also, again, credit to Arizona for finding it and taking advantage of it and knowing where they have skill sets and knowing how NDSU might be game planning for that and exploiting it accordingly. So I think that is more, I think I would be giving more credit to Jaden DeLore as a quarterback in that scenario versus how that could play out in the Valley with those defenders.
Yeah, and that's fair. I tell you one thing, and was what we're going to bleed into here. They might have thrown it over the middle, because Courtney Eubanks is him. That was that was something else. You go over to Arizona's side and look at, like, I'm guessing that Cowing is, you know, probably the guy that he ended up on the most and ended up with the, let's see, 5 catches on. So he had a like 30 some odd yard touchdown. And I don't mm-hmm. know that Courtney was the primary in coverage there.
That was at the end there, right?
He scored the last 22 yard touchdown. Okay. So that's not that long, but he had five catches for 55 yards on 7 targets after getting 14 targets against Mississippi State and 10 targets against San Diego State. Courtney did a heck of a job locking up in that game, and it was clear to me that they were specifically just not going to throw it over there. So Courtney's actual coverage numbers, according to the PFF College stats, is that he gave up 1 catch on 3 targets for 5 yards. So they did not charge him with that touchdown. Wow. That touchdown was charged to Oscar Benson, which, why the hell, excuse me, why Oscar Benson is covering Jacob Cowing is a different question. But, yeah, I mean, Pac-12 game against Cowing and the Dorian Singer kid and the absolute, like, alien that was that wide receiver, the 5-star wide receiver kid, that's a big deal. Like, that's an impressive performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a silver lining. I mean, after a loss, you're going to tend to look at a lot of the more negative stuff, which has kind of been the common theme here. But if there is something that is very, very positive to take a look at, you have Mr. Eubanks being the guy to be able to take away a number one, a bona fide number one. I mean, Jacob Cowing was the type of player that I was very concerned about coming into this game, similar to the running back from Eastern Washington years ago in 2010. His name escapes me, but those type of individuals, or like a, even like a David Johnson from UNI, those individuals can win the game by themselves. Jacob Cowing is that type of player. And that clearly did not happen. Now, granted, he big time players make big plays and big time moments in games. So sorry, you're hearing this. My dog's getting after a water bottle. Hold on one second, Ross. Sorry about this. Can't go, buddy. So I think Courtney Eubanks being able to step up in that scenario is going to play out well long-term, a.k.a. postseason. So I am very encouraged by that. It's just a matter of others following suit. So hopefully they can at least take a look at something and learn from an individual on their side of the ball in Courtney.
Yeah, I understand. I agree. The other guy that to me is super impressive is Lufke. Like, he just, I thought he was, okay, well, I'll put it to you this way. I think he's the best player in FCS college football. I can almost guarantee you he's not going to win the Walter Payton, but I think that just showed out that just showed out as like what he is capable of doing. And if NDSU ever did have to build their entire offense around him, they could. Now, they don't have to because they have Gindy and they have five other backs, but to me, he was just a man among men. Like, he mm-hmm. was the best player on the field against a Pac-12 school with a bunch of transfers and a bunch of high-level skill players.
Yeah. I don't know what his all-purpose yardage was, 170 or 180, something like that, as a fullback.
Yeah.
Slash wide receiver, slash running back. There's not enough we can say about this young man. I think we could talk about him for 20 minutes every week and how impactful and how much influence he has on a game. Arizona probably, I would like to think, knew that 44 was going to be a force, and they clearly couldn't stop it anyway. So I would have personally liked to see him more, especially in this type of game, knowing that he is going to have to take it over. He certainly did, but I would have used him even more. Possibly. So now you can't become too one dimensional, but man, I tell you what, I put out a tweet after his run up the middle where he kind of got delayed a little bit and then housed it. I asked Siri through Twitter if it was possible to give out the Walter Payton Award midseason. So, like you said, I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen because he's not going to have a gaudy stat line by the end of the year, theoretically. But Hunter Lipke definitely cemented himself as the best player in FCS football in that game.
I totally agree. I mean, his ability to catch the ball like a high-level tight end, not just a tight end, a high-level tight end, as well mm-hmm. as being the best tailback and a very, very good fullback, he's just a football player, man, and that's the highest compliment I feel like I could pay to him. I'm very impressed with him, you know, before and after this game. And I thought the FCS championship was you know, a big opportunity for him to showcase himself. But my gosh, this game just really cemented, honestly, Lipke as an all-time great at NDSU, like a guy that in 5 years when we look back on all this, he'll be one of the names that we mention.
Yeah, I think what this did for him is it might have boosted his draft stock, maybe just a couple of points. So, man, I tell you what, I'm pumped for the kid. I'm certainly very proud of him. And I know that Coach Roll, when he talks about him, he just lights up. And certainly to nobody's surprise. So, you know, maybe we can not have to use him so much in the offense, but utilize him in so many ways because you're going to have to game plan for it on defenses. So I think that's going to bode well in the Missouri Valley to get some of these other guys a lot more touches. But the main reason being is because you don't want to see your fullback being your leading receiver. So I know he's a great player. Love the kid. Obviously want to see him continue to do well, but your fullback shouldn't be your leading receiver in a game like this either. So, yeah.
Folks, this episode of Bison Report Radio is also brought to you by Tundra Insurance. Tundra Insurance in Horace, North Dakota, just south of Big Irv's, right there on the main drag. Go see my guy, Quinn Ollo. Folks, if you are doing insurance business with one of the companies that you see having commercials on football Sundays, or a company where you go in there and that is the one product that that person sells no other products, sells that single company, you're taking a gamble. And that gamble is that that person that you're talking to, that company that you're doing business with, is the perfect fit for your family. If not, you're having to go around and talk to six or seven of those guys. And that's a lot of time taken up from your day, from your week, from your month, whatever. Come and see Quinn at Tundra Insurance, 701-969-1661. He's got 20 carriers that he does business with and is happy to shop around for you and find the best fit for your family, for your coverage, and get you the best possible deal with very, very minimal effort on your side. Once again, Quinn at Tundra Insurance, that's 701-969-1661. Trev, you're a receiver guy, allegedly. Four of PFF College's lowest seven offensive grades. So just so people understand where we're coming from on this, NDSU, they had 24 guys playing this game on offense. 24 total players participated in this game on offense. And four of the bottom seven grades, total offensive grades, were wide receivers. Now, Raja got a top five grade, but he only played 10 snaps. And the way it works is it's graded on a per snap basis. So if you play three really awesome snaps, you're going to have a high grade, even if your teammate played 60 snaps. It's just based on per play. So, and it's also not the gospel. All of that said, there wasn't a ton of production from the receiver room. They did not appear to create a ton of separation per this grading. Trev, do we need more out of these guys? Do they need to maybe check on the Carson Hagerlees, the Mekhi Collins, the Bryce Lances? What's your remedy here for this wide receiver group?
I do think you got to get more bodies out there. I'm not in practice, so I don't know what the type of workload is there. The stat line it can be misleading, especially in this type of offense. I mean, I've certainly experienced that myself. You know that coming in. I mean, it's not an offense as a wideout where you're going to put up gaudy numbers. Now, that being said, I haven't seen an all 22 view. I haven't reviewed tape, but I don't know how open they're getting. I don't know how much confidence there is in them. There's just so many question marks that nothing's really proven. I mean, Zach certainly stepped up this year versus previous years. Now, albeit I know he's battled some injuries, but he scored touchdowns in each of the first two games and has made the most of his opportunities. But you take a look at the top four wide receivers on the depth chart. I mean, you had a catch from Jake. I believe that was like in the first drive. And I know he's got pretty good hands on the edges and getting his hands on people, but we definitely need to see more. I think they just need to find different ways to get them the ball, whether that's through play action on a naked boot or get guys in motion and run them across, dragging into the flats. There certainly needs to be a better and more consistent production from the wide receiver room, because we talked about this before the season started about, okay, do you rotate a lot of young guys in non-conference? And we thought that was going to be what was occurring, because it's really unproven. I mean, number one is gone. He's with the Green Bay Packers now. So until you put it on tape, nobody's going to respect it. And my concern with that is it could cause a team to be one-dimensional, to no surprise to anybody. Hashtag analysis. Team's going to load a box and put man-on-man on the edges until they can beat them. So I hope that especially early in Valley play, that they can find ways to get separation with those individuals and get them rolling early. I mean, Jake did a great job on that opening drive. Again, I believe it was the opening drive with his reception. But I think from as a group and as a whole, they just need to put something on tape to make people go, okay, they can, and they are capable of doing it. I don't know if that was not part of the game plan. I don't know. And there's only 12 attempts, but is the 12 attempts indicative also of the confidence in the room as a whole? So, I guess we'll find out very, very quickly in Valley play, because you're going to have to throw the football at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be down in a game. We're going to need – there's going to be 8-9 guys in the box during a game at some point, and you are going to have to throw the football. And I think you're exactly right. They're just the ebbs and the flows of a Valley season. It's a big deal. Okay, let me see here. I believe, 58 total snaps on – offense, 53 for Cam Miller and 9 for Cole Payton, and my math would tell me that means they were on the field together 4 times. What did you think of the QB usage in this game?
I actually thought they used it very well. Cole is certainly cementing himself as for what his role has been. I mean, he gets the ball on a snap and good luck tackling him. Now, granted, he didn't do it at a very pivotal moment in the game on the 4th down. Hindsight 2020, you think, okay, hand it to 44. Up to that point, I don't recall them really stopping that. I think Cole is probably going to use that and learn from it very quickly. That's a very much a, hey, young man, take this tape and learn from it and utilize it, because he was getting 5 yards a pop. And until they stop it, why not go to it? And so I thought that was effective. I would like to see Cole throw the ball more, just to put it on tape. Simply put, make teams honor. You put him and Cam on the field at the same time, you could get very creative really quickly, especially with how big Cole is, and he can run the football. So. I think it's a classic Friday Night Lights quote, and he can pass. So if he can put that on tape and he can pass, I think this rotation is going to be lethal. Cam played well. I thought Cam played well. I do think he could have done more, kind of taking the bull by the horns as an adage. But those two coming in and out, I think they have utilized that actually pretty well, in my opinion.
Yeah, and again, Cam was 10 of 12 for 124 yards and a touchdown. That's over 10 yards an attempt, or excuse me, 10 yards. No, it is over. It is over 10 yards. That's efficiency. You want to complain about average depth of target? That's not all on Cam. Maybe it is a little bit, but you a lot of that was designed shots to Lipke that he hit, and boots to Gindy in the flat. Like, that's the design of the play. What are you going to do? Have him bomb it to the over route because you want to see him throw it longer when Gindy's wide open in the flat? That's not how football works. One thing I will say, I mean, it's been, you know, whether it's Easton Stick in the 2016 game against James Madison or whatever, it's hard to find these. There's so few losses to choose from. It's hard to find like these examples. But another example where NDSU, you know, needed a touchdown late and probably needed a throwing touchdown late, or at least a throwing drive, and couldn't get it done, didn't get it done. What do you think the answer is with the 2-minute drill, or with not that it's a huge problem, but there haven't been a ton of examples. Now, granted, they're usually just winning the game. So, of course, there aren't a ton of examples, but not a ton of examples of NDSU getting the ball down 4 with 3 minutes left to go and getting the dub.
Yeah, I think it goes back to really the last couple of topics we've hit on. One, receivers getting open and finding ways to get guys the ball. I mean, if you have 2 to 3 receivers that you know you can get open and they have you know, their handful of routes that they execute really well and have very good rapport with the quarterback with, you can find ways to make that happen. And we've seen that in the past in very, not very many situations, but when it's been needed, we've seen it. I mean, my senior year is probably the best case study for Bison football, that is, for those type of drives. And I think the receivers just need to continue to keep working to get open. And then also the quarterbacks getting more reps with them in a game. And when live bullets are being thrown, and one, you make a mistake and learn from it, or you put something on tape to where you can kind of loosen defenders up and get more creative with like crossing routes and that sort of thing in those situations. So I don't know if it's a rep. I don't know if it's a thing where you have to rep more, but it might be. I don't know. I mean, I wish I was able to go to the practices being 1500 miles away, but we used to do it every Monday night. We would do a 2-minute drill, and very, very, very few weeks, maybe once or twice throughout the year, we would do it in the middle of the week. So maybe it's something that they implement also on a Wednesday for a period or two, just to make an emphasis of how critical that is to influence a football game. It's their last chance to score, and you have to have it to win the ball game. And if they're not able to execute it in an efficient manner on the field when live bullets are happening, you might need to rep it more and see it more. So don't know what the exact answer is, but I think it's probably something where it encompasses all of that, where guys just need to find ways to get open. They need to put more throws on tape where they're executing those to loosen the defenders up, and then just getting reps of it to emphasize to the entire team, not just the skill guys, this is going to make or break. This can make or break a season, quite honest. As we've seen in the past with, you know, you and I, 2015, South Dakota State, 2014, Illinois State, 2015 national title game. They can win you an Addy. So, I think the guys here just need to understand, especially from the Arizona game, attention to detail matters, especially when you come down to a close game and it was back and forth. So, if that's 2-minute drill, then it's 2-minute drill. So,
Play calling towards the end. I think a lot of folks, that's just a lot of fans just love to throw around the word play calling, and use it as kind of a blanket statement for things that didn't work. Well, I should have called a different play. I get that. I understand all of it, but I usually disagree with almost everyone that you know talks about play calling. I did not love that the final series. A perimeter run to Lipke, a single back run, I think, to Kobe, and then a tunnel screen to Braylon. That was just an absolute disaster. I think I definitely would have given Cam two opportunities to throw, for sure. And I would have liked to seen a real passing play, you know? Maybe that tunnel screen on second and long. I don't know. But it's not like it was 3rd and 14, you know. Run a clear out for one of the slot receivers and have him run an outbreaking route. Run a stop for Noah. Have him sit 9 yards down the field and box somebody out. I think that showed, at least the way that it looked, it looked like a coach that didn't trust his quarterback. And I know that that's not the case because I've talked to both of them. I mean, I know that's not the case, but that's the way it looked like calling a plays for a quarterback that you don't think is very good. Do you agree with me at all?
I do. I remember sitting there in our hotel room in Newark as Carlo was covering the Panthers Giants. I didn't have any audio because Carlo and my daughter were sleeping in the room. So I was just watching the game. I stood up, and in my mind on third down, I kept thinking gap screen, gap screen, gap screen, gap screen. That's what DJ scored on against Sam Houston State after the fake punt. It's what Derek Lang got a first down on against Kansas State on 3rd and 11. Gap screen in those moments have proved time and time again to be very effective. And when they went tunnel screen, a part of me thought they just had like a bad game of telephone or something. So that part, I hate using the word disappointed, because going back to the beginning of the pod with Coach Ent saying it is more frustrating than disappointing, that was the only part I would say disappointed in. I think they got in too much of a frenzy. There was plenty of time. I wish they wouldn't have punted too. We could talk about that. Just by the flow of the game and how well Jaden DeLora was playing, you were not going to stop him. They were, I mean, and Jacob Cowling was starting to get rolling with the touchdown on the previous drive. So, the Hunter on the run on first down, right call. Excellent. The unfortunate part there is you're behind the chains, because I believe he was just stuffed. I can't remember who got the second run. It was either Kobe or Tamarick. I don't remember, but that was, I think, for a loss too. So now you're behind the chains even more. I would have liked to see, like you're saying, on second. Now, yeah. So I think that second down call, I would have liked to have seen a stick route.
Yeah.
Just to get that quick completion, because you're in 4 minute drill, but you're kind of in 2 minute mode. Like, there needs to be a sense of urgency. Like, you need to get a quick completion to get people to back up.
Yes.
And so, again, I think this rapport between quarterback and pass catchers probably needs to get developed a little bit. I'm being very much an armchair quarterback in saying that, because I'm not a practice. I don't know what they have got game plan for the Valley versus my conference. Like, I don't know. But I do agree with you in the fact that how those plays were called, how that flowed, I think it was like the situation was probably a little bit big for them in that moment, unfortunately. So now had Tamarick broke one on second down and there was a gash. I mean, shoot, then we're not even talking about it. So,
right.
But yeah, I do think that there needed to be a little bit more of a creative element in that last drive before they punted, which I also don't agree with.
Right. No, the punt thing, I was fine with it in the moment. And then I realized, well, if you only have two timeouts, then the game's over with one third down. If you had, you could theoretically maybe have gotten away with an early conversion. You know, you give it up on third down and you've already burned two timeouts. The game's over either way. Knowing that NDSU had two timeouts instead of three, I do wish that they would have gone for it on fourth and eight. Just decide the game, but do it with your players, not theirs. You know?
Yeah. Put the game in our hands. And here's where my mind went. It's the butterfly effect is crazy. So if you go back to Iowa in 2016, NDSU scores, goes for two, doesn't get it. Iowa's going to run the football. You can get a stop. They have been able to make stops that game. They weren't gassed. You're playing against different personnel. You're playing against a different type of offense that you haven't been able to stop because they've got 31 points.
Right.
So that's where my mind went. I'm like, you're playing a different style of football to where you're, like you just said, you're putting the game in their hands. And
yeah,
they're
spreading you out. Like, they're winning, and specifically, they're winning on third down. And where did they ultimately lose the game? On a backside cut from the running back due to over pursuit, and picked up a rushing first down on like third and five.
Yeah, he got like 10 yards on it.
Yeah, looking back on it, I think they should have gone for it. And you're putting faith in a defense that had already given up 31 points to get a stop on three downs.
Yeah, that's not a knock on the guys either. I know we've kind of been somewhat critical of them and their tackling and where they can go. They're certainly more than capable. They just didn't make the plays in the moments that they needed to, unlike Arizona. Arizona did it every single time.
Yep.
They also played cleaner football. I mean, the face mask on that third and 12 is a killer. I mean, that just killed it.
Well, and on this one too, Trey, like we're talking about technical failures. Not once have you or I talked about effort or Bison pride for a second. Like, that just wasn't the problem.
No, not one bit. Yeah. No, not one bit. If I was questioning that, my tone, this would be a lot faster pod. We would be dissecting less and I would be just The word disappointment would be there. It'd be very apparent. That's why I think Coach Ant said it best. I think he was very, very sound in that statement, saying this, it's just frustrating because you knew it was there. You had the opportunity to win, and you honestly probably felt like you were the better football team. You just did not execute in the big moments. One time, Arizona did it every time. You got to give them credit because
they're huge on money down. Huge.
They were every single time. I can't remember that defensive end's name that caused the strip sack. He's a stud.
Eccles, good player.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, they had to have a play in that moment to give themselves a shot. And yes, you had clear momentum. That's a 14-point swing, those two drives.
Yep.
That one play that you can pinpoint to. So the fourth and two with Cole that we discussed, the face mask on third and 12, getting the drive before the end of the half to get 3 points, that ultimately decided the spread. So, yeah, I mean, Arizona, they've certainly righted the ship for where they were last year. And I think those guys are going to give themselves a shot at playing in a bowl game this year.
I'd like to play him again. I think it'd be fun. You know, obviously it'd be great to have him come up to Fargo or play a neutral site game. But if it's that damn personal, play us again. That's my opinion. If it's that personal, let's come do it again then.
So, again, where my mind went was the way they celebrated. I mean, good for them. It is a good win for them. I hate the tag of, oh, what's that? Yeah, sometimes, you know what, you play a good team with good players and you beat them. Like, it's a good win. Winning is hard in general.
Yes.
Let alone a team that has been consistently beating their FBS foes. And yes, even the ones that they've lost have been by, there's only been like, I think one blowout for FBS games. One in 2009. That was a bad football team for NDSU. Lost to Wyoming by what? One. Lost to Minnesota by one. Got a field goal block.
Yep.
Lost to Iowa State by a lot in 2009. And I think this is the only other one, right?
Right. Yep.
Those are the four. So as a staff and a program at Arizona, you have got to feel really, really good about this, in which they clearly did based off their body language after the game. But where my mind went is very similar to another streak ending, is when the championship streak ended to James Madison. It's that personal. And that's how you want to frame this up, that NDSU is cheap. We're not a cheap program. I mean, we're not. I know I have an alumni lens and a former player lens, but I did not see anything that would indicate that. And if it was the case, I would love to be shown the tape. I don't think it's there, because I think you would have multiple people saying something if that was to be seen, not only in like covering the team, but just former players in general. And I haven't heard any of that. So I just think that's interesting. It's almost like a pseudo rivalry with James Madison and how that started. So hopefully they're calling us again, because that was a lot of fun. And I personally do hope that is a small glimpse into a FBS type future, because that game was fun. NDSU did fall short. They did have a chance. I do feel like that they beat themselves in a lot of moments. That's not to discredit anything Arizona did, because they certainly deserved the win. It just gets me excited about what potentially could be and how fun it could be, because that was cool. That many fans in Arizona, as low as my volume was in our hotel room, I could hear it. So, I think what you have on the script here, play us again, I think that's awesome. Please do. It'd be awesome. I would absolutely love it. Maybe come to Fargo. I don't think they'll do that, but.
Meet us in like Omaha or something.
That'd be a neutral site game with Arizona, and a destination game. How about this? Vegas.
There you
Vegas,
go.
Vegas, we're putting it out there. Yeah. Vegas versus Arizona in 2030, maybe.
Yeah. Bison, Arizona at Allegiant Field.
Done. I think did we just create something?
There you go. Yeah. We'll call Matt Larson and have him hammer out the details.
Oh, he'll
he'll get right on that. So will Arizona's AD as well.
Clearly they listen to this pod, so yeah.
All right, Trev, we're closing in on an hour here. What are they working on in practice this week?
It's a loss. I think it allows you to reset and refocus. I don't think it's going to be anything groundbreaking. defensively, going back, it's going back to tackling and just paying attention to detail. And I think you're going to simplify the playbook even more to let the guys cut it loose, go play fast, and go get a win on the board. And then you get into the following week. So you're on the road again to start conference play. You got to start it off with a win. And the way they do that, especially against USD, who hasn't really shown a whole lot, I think you just let the dogs out and let them play fast. Simplify things, get back to basics, and get back on the winning train. Simple as that.
Fair enough. All right, folks, we want to thank Mr. Trevor Gebhardt for his time. We want to thank Gateway Chevrolet for being a sponsor of the show. We want to thank Tundra Insurance for being a sponsor of the show. Have a phenomenal rest of your week, folks, and go Bison.